Are you nuts? Huh?
Listen, I feel good about what I did.
You put that bastard on trial.
He should be on trial.
Your job is not to take sides.
What is my job? Please! Help me!
Sure was.
Here!
What's that?
Nothing.
Here!
Christ, you really blast them all, don't you? Blacks, Jews, Mexicans. You want the whole goddamn world to yourself?
Why didn't you tell me about that woman? That woman in my old room. He killed her. He thought it was me. Look, I have told you I am checking out of here. Have I made myself clear?
Don't leave me. He's here. I know it.
Yeah, this double shift is going to kill me.
This is Lauren Marie Taylor from Friday the 13th Part 2 and Girls Night Out. And you're listening to The Hysteria Continues.
And indeed you are. Welcome back to The Hysteria Continues, episode 120. And this time we're going into... what's happening in the background?
I don't know.
Clicking or something.
I heard clicking as well.
Mm.
Joseph?
Sorry, Gentlemen, sorry, I was adjusting my volume.
Oh, okay. Well, that's what you call it. Anyway, welcome.
Just adjusting my volume here. Oh.
It feels so good.
Eric.
Oh, Eric.
Oh, it's going to be one of those shows.
Oh, Joseph. Ooh.
So we're going to be checking in and checking out this infamous video nasty, Visiting Hours, a Canadian slasher movie from 1982 or 81. I know it was made in late 80, but anyway.
Yeah, you have it in 1981 on the History of Lives website.
Okay, well, that's obviously right then, isn't it?
You're breaking into my background information.
Okay, we'll stop that then. But we'll be talking about why this relatively mild slash movie ended up on the Video Nasties list in the UK, and comparing it to some of the other hospital slashers, I guess. So, but before we do that, let's see how we're all doing. So, Nathan, how are you doing this fine morning?
I'm okay. How are you?
I'm not too bad, thank you. Not too bad. It's a weekend, so all is good. We're recording this a week early, so probably haven't got a huge amount of things to that we've watched since the last show. But, Joseph, how are you doing?
Ah, my morning scream.
Well, there'll be lots of screaming coming on. And talking of screamers, how are you doing, Eric?
Hey! I resent that. Yeah, I had a great week watching Susie flying around on a really crap flying carpet on top of the Pops.
It's a great video, that.
Yeah, of course
it is, Justin.
Sorry?
Just because she's not on a chariot with...
Well, the chariots do rule.
Well, I don't know
about that. And if you're in a chariot in a pop video in 1981, then you were cool. If you're on a really badly chromed flying carpet, then you are not cool.
No, I think the Arabian Nights kind of beats Thunder in the Valley, whatever it was called.
Thunder in the Mountains.
Oh, right, okay. Anyway, apart from that, Eric, apart from watching fantastic videos, are you okay?
I'm very good, thank you, yes.
You've got burly workmen outside your window, haven't you?
There's burly workmen outside my window, so a diesel power generator may... you know, rip into gear at any stage during this podcast.
So what does sound like? Does it sound like you're flapping? You're fapping?
Like this?
Yes. Is that what it sounds
does.
Like?
It does. A bit of a deeper tone, maybe.
Okay. Well, hopefully. Well, let's keep going until that happens and see if we can survive. Well, let's talk about what you've been watching recently. I know a couple of us have caught the new Netflix movie Hush. So, Joseph, do you want to go first? Because I know you've seen that.
Yes, I watched Hush on Netflix. I did not download it. I actually watched it on Netflix. And I had actually been looking forward to this, but I was a little disappointed. I think the movie is very well shot, and it's I'd say pretty suspenseful in its first 20 to 25 minutes. The problem is it really shoots itself in the foot by giving the killer a quote-unquote personality and removing his mask. I'm trying to avoid spoilers, but, I mean, it happens so early, You're going to see it, you know, in the first few minutes of the film anyway. After that, it really never recovers, for me at least. I just don't understand why they felt the need to not only give this this killer a personality, but they cast this this kind of the most non-intimidating guy they can think of to, you know, go on this killing spree. Well, I wouldn't really call it a spree, but you get my meaning. Not a terrible film, just a disappointment. So maybe a 4 out of 10.
Hmm. Okay. Yeah. Eric and Nathan, have you seen it?
I watched it as well, yeah.
Mm-hmm. What did you think?
I'd be a bit more generous. I'd probably give it a 6 out of 10. I do completely agree, though, that unmasking the killer so early is a big mistake. And the movie turns into kind of a home invasion film, which is not a genre I'm particularly fond of. So when it looks like it's going to be a bona fide slasher movie at the start, I was well into it. But then, yeah, my interest began to wane afterwards. And, yeah, the killer is kind of a non-entity in the end. And it would have been better to keep him, because the mask was quite eerie. It was sort of Michael Myers-esque, sort of this blank, pale face mask. So that was creepy. But when he takes it off, that's the scariness gone from the film altogether. But I thought it was pretty decent, well made. And, you know, I... surprised that something of that quality didn't make it into the cinemas, because I thought it was as good as any as The Boy or The Forest or any of those type of ones I've seen recently.
I think it was probably, wasn't it made for Netflix?
I'm not sure the background of it, but I thought the production qualities were really decent on it. Yeah.
What about you, Nathan? Have you seen it?
No, I haven't watched it yet. But this talk of it turning into a home invasion film is not making me really want to see it that much, because I'm like Eric, I don't really care for that particular subgenre. And one of the main reasons I don't care for it is in, I would say, 90% of home invasion films, the bad guys win. And I don't like that. So.
Okay. Well, we won't give anything away.
That bothers me.
Won't give anything away.
That bothers me about home invasion movies as well, is that the bad guys constantly win.
And it's not just, you know, like, the whole idea of, you know, the bad guys winning, because I like some movies, you know, where the villains have won. But what bothers me about home invasion movies is that's how almost all of them end. So, I mean, they've become predictable, because if I start watching one and I realize it's a home invasion movie, I'm like, okay, well, the killers are going to end up killing this family and getting away with it, because that's how all these movies end. And then I guess the filmmakers think they're being so original by, like, letting the villains win. But I'm like, that's not really original anymore.
Hmm. Yeah, no, fair enough. I mean, I kind of liked it. I probably agree more with Eric. But it's still a little bit ho-hum, a bit kind of run-of-the-mill. Especially considering that it comes from Mike Flanagan, who did the excellent Absentia and the interesting Oculus.
I didn't even realize that was the director.
Yeah.
Absentia is just, you know, really good. I think this is a definite step down in my opinion.
I'm gonna guess it may have been a job for hire. You know, he may have directed for hire for this one, because it's, I mean, if you haven't seen it, without giving anything away, the whole gimmick, I kind of guess, of the movie is that the woman, the main character, is deaf. So she can't hear what's going on around her. So the killer is able to kind of play with her in certain ways and do certain things without her realizing. But that kind of gimmick, it doesn't really carry the movie, does it?
No.
Well, the problem is that there's so many ripe opportunities for, you know, them to play with, you know, the deaf mute angle. Like, they do it a little bit. Like, there's instances where she's like on her laptop or something and he's right behind her, but they just kind of stop that and she basically, you know, knows that he's there. They could have really kind of amped up the tension just by kind of playing with that a little bit more, but they don't.
Yeah, it's a worth a watch. It's certainly not the worst movie, and let's face it, it's a million times better than Bloodhook or Hollywood's New Blood. So we should be thankful.
Oh my God, yeah.
I feel like we're out of, it's like that Madonna song, isn't it? Is it we're out of the wilderness now? We're kind of.
I made it through the wilderness.
So we're having a little break from listener picks. As much as we love you,
I quite loved Bloodhook.
Yes. Well.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, you are Nathan.
Yeah, you are Nathan, and we love you for it. But sometimes we need a little bit of sustenance. We need something a little bit better. don't we?
Yes. We do. We do.
So, but thank you, Joseph. Anything else you've been watching last week?
Yes, I saw a found footage slasher film called The Burning Moor Incident. And this is a little, well, I wouldn't say infamous, but it was made around 2010. And it got a little bit of publicity for having, I don't know if you two will be familiar with them, but it's starring Jeff Tate from Queensryche as the killer. Basically, it's about this home renovation slash reality TV crew who go to renovate this house, and they have, you know, cameras set up kind of like, I guess, Big Brother or something like that, as they kind of renovate this old dilapidated house. And Jeff Tate as I don't even remember his name in the film, is basically just shows up in the house and starts killing them off one by one. So it has that kind of, you know, that it sidesteps of why don't they put the camera down, because it's all like cameras that are already been mounted. So it gets away with that. But this film never got an actual stateside release. It got like a small dump onto iTunes and the UK DVD, but then it just kind of vanished. And it took me like 6 years to find a copy. And I can understand why it vanished, because it's pretty awful. I kind of wonder why they cast someone. I mean, he's not, I wouldn't say he's super famous, but he's a name, at least in the States. Why they cast someone like, say, Jeff Tate or anyone, you know, famous, because you don't see who it is. It's like the only time you ever see the killer is like grainy footage. And so that's kind of like inexplicable. And I think the just the characters are just bafflingly, you know, absurd and annoying. It's basically a bunch of, you know, I'd liken them to like Joe Pesci impersonators, like, you know, faux Italian accents going around, you know, fixing a house. It's just very boring, and all the kills are the same. Just basically someone wanders into a room, the lights go out, and then the lights come back on, and he's standing there, and he hits them with something, and then it cuts to the next scene. It's just over and over. So I guess I can understand why it kind of just vanished into thin air back in 2010. But I was very disappointed, because I, you know, the premise sounded interesting, but it was just a huge letdown.
Okay. Well, I've not seen that. Sorry, I misheard you. I thought you said Jeff Capes, who was
no.
That's Jeff Tate from Queensryche.
Mm. That would have been the first killer shot putter, perhaps.
Was he not a wrestler?
He was a shot putter, strongman, and professional Highlands Games competitor. Right. I would have thought you'd be right up your alley.
I'm sorry. Speaking of sports-related slasher films, did either of you see that trailer for Field of Screams?
Yes.
I have.
Really good.
Yeah, it looks pretty interesting.
But you know,
I don't know what it is.
It's a modern movie that's doing it as a throwback, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's what I thought.
That's what I think. I mean, I just found out about it, like, just kind of through secondhand.
Someone else kind of look like an old school trailer, though.
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
You know, it's one of those ones where they film the trailer to try and raise the money for the movie.
Okay.
So it's that's why I read there's a they basically filmed the trailer, so it's kind of I don't know whether or not the film's going to be exactly like that, or but yeah, they've kind of done a faux trailer to raise money for a film.
I imagine it would probably take a lot of money to sustain that kind of, you know, attention to detail. I mean, because it really does look quite 80s.
Yes, no, it does. It looks really good, but yeah. So I think there is a fundraising or a crowdfunding page for it, but which I think if you Google search, you'll find.
So, okay.
Cool. Okay. Well, thank you, Joseph. Eric, how about you?
Well, I've been quite busy this week hanging out with Jeremy Irons and stuff. Oh, wait, that was you, Justin.
Well, I had pizza in a same restaurant as Jeremy Irons.
Ooh, la-di-da.
I know.
Jeremy's iron.
But he was about five tables away, and he was appearing at the theatre.
That's the restraining order.
Yeah. He was appearing at the theatre across the road.
All right.
So that's why.
Bob Thompson, city engineer's office. We'd like to get an idea of the damage.
Was that
Jeremy
Irons?
Sorry, that's my Jeremy Irons impression.
Okay.
From what film?
What's it from?
Die Hard
with a Vengeance.
Right. Yes.
Oh. Well, I was going to St. Ives. I met a man with seven wives.
Every cat had seven wives. Every cat took. Okay. Blah, 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 blah. Tongue twister. Sorry.
Yeah. Okay. Well, the only thing I've watched this week is two new 88 Films Blu-ray releases: Scalps and Splatter University, which we've covered.
Oh my goodness!
In the past. Now, don't get too excited because the actual film quality is not very good on Splatter University, and it's appalling on Scalps. I don't think there's any reason for it to be on Blu-ray. It's not like it's completely watchable, and I'm fine with it. But there's going to be purists out there who are not going to be happy with these films on Blu-ray, expecting pristine prints, whereas Scalps looks like a VHS transfer, if you ask me. But that was my first time ever watching Scalps, and I thought it was better than I thought because it's directed by Fred Olen Ray, and I don't come to expect much from Fred Olen Ray. But what's interesting is that there is extra features on both discs that feature interviews with slasher expert Justin Kurzweil, where Justin manages to find 9 minutes of nice things to say about Scalps. Well done, Justin.
I was under pressure too. I quite liked Scalps. It's quite good fun.
Scalps is
How many minutes did you dedicate to Splatter University for good things?
It's about the same. It's about 9 or 10 minutes.
Okay, all right.
And you do admit in the thing that you didn't like it at first, but you've grown to appreciate it now.
Yes.
Well, you don't mention that Nathan is responsible for that.
Oh, Justin, how dare you?
Yeah.
Well, that was forgetting the little people.
Yeah.
Both of those are recorded when we had the monumental meeting, historic meeting.
Yes, I remember that. It was when you were in Manchester, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So,
but no, they're actually really good. I would recommend picking up both films, even though they're not pristine quality prints. They've got lots of extras on it. I mean, there's a commentary track on Splatter University, including, even though it's not advertised in the back, it includes Forbes Riley as one of the commentators, and there's a commentary track again on Scalps and that, so well worth picking up. Even I still think Splatter University is quite fun. I remember when we watched it for the podcast, I was thinking this is going to be awful, but I remember thinking this is actually kind of silly and fun. I love the dancing in it. That's my favorite part. Scalps, yeah, as I said, it delivered more than I thought it was going to be. I love that mechanical lion thing at the start, as you refer to it, Justin, quite comically in your in the featurette you do, that it's trying to be like Billy Idol with curling the lip.
Yeah, but it's only meant to be seen for about 2 seconds, wasn't it? And then they showed it for about 5 minutes. This kind of
Yeah.
it's very funny. Yeah. Simple animatronic lion head, which didn't really make much sense anyway in the context of Indian burial ground.
Not at all.
I'd like to cover Scalps on the show one day, and also Ghost Dance. Maybe they make a good double bill.
They would make a good double bill.
Because Ghost Dance really doesn't get the love at all, does it? I mean, you hardly ever hear anyone talk about Ghost Dance, but I think it's quite an effective little slasher movie from 1980.
And Breakdance, which was a movie from 1984, was called Break In the States. But we should cover that as well, because it's brilliant.
Has it got any slasher?
It's got Lucinda Dickey in it from Ninja 3 and Cheerleader Kim.
That might be a little bit too tenuous, perhaps.
Okay.
But
Slash Dance? No, maybe. Flash.
No.
No, we're not ever covering Slash Dance if, as Nathan says, it's worse than Hollywood's New Blood.
Wait, I'll tell you guys this, I'd never pick it as a choice.
There we go.
Well, there we go. My goodness.
That speaks volumes.
Yeah, it does speak volumes. So, okay, well, thank you, Eric. Anything else?
No, that was it. Yeah.
Okay, well, Nathan, how about you?
Unfortunately, since it's only been a week since we last recorded, I have not had a chance. I'm planning to watch some horror tonight because my friend Melissa's coming up, and we're going to pick a few horror movies to watch. But so I'll have them to talk about next time. But the only thing I've been watching is Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt.
Okay. Right, so I haven't seen any
comedy.
Is that good?
Oh, I love it. I mean, it's really silly and over the top, ridiculous, but I mean, I think it's a lot of fun.
Cool. Okay. Right. Well, thank you. I've not really watched much apart from Hush. I picked up some cheap Arrow are doing. I've got a sale on at the moment, so I picked up Contamination.
Brilliant movie.
Cozy, sort of alien ripoff. Which is a lot of fun, and the extras were really good. There was a documentary on Italian ripoffs of American films like Jaws you know, or like the Lamberto Bava, is it Ghost Shark or Devil Shark?
Devouring Waves or something,
Devouring Waves, and Tintoria, the one with Susan George, the Mexican one, and all those, the Great White, and all the different kind of rip-offs that they did, which is worth the price alone. So, I was working my way through that. But I haven't really seen anything else of note. So, without further ado, I think it's probably time to check in for a little operation, isn't it?
Yes, please, Daddy.
Okay. Yes. Well, here is the trailer for, or the TV spot for Visiting Hours.
In this hospital, your next visit may be your last. Visiting Hours, so frightening you may never recover. Rated R.
A psychopathic killer viciously attacks a woman journalist when she returns home from a TV broadcast. She survives, but the killer refuses to give up, and any girl who stands in his way is in for similar treatment. The trail leads to a hospital where the journalist is at last cornered and finds that she has no one to turn to for help. That's the brief blurb on the back of the UK VHS release of Visiting Hours, which I have a copy of, which is one of the infamous video nasties, which we'll talk about a little bit more in a bit. Visiting Hours was yet another Canadian slasher movie, coming from the kind of same stable as Happy Birthday to Me, My Bloody Valentine, and American Nightmare. It's a curious movie. In so much, it's definitely a slasher movie, but it's done almost like a middle-aged slasher movie in so much, rather than having a young girl or a bouncy Barbie Benton being chased around the hospital. You have like a Lee Grant, who was in her mid-50s at this point, being chased by a kind of approaching middle-aged Michael Ironside, who was fresh off David Cronenberg's Scanners at this point. It's also it was a pickup by 20th Century Fox, so it was released by a major studio, a bit like at the time many of the majors were picking up films like Friday 13th and Paramount and Happy Birthday to Me by Columbia. So 20th Century Fox released this and Terror Train, but it's also, for a relatively highly budgeted film, it's quite sleazy. It's got some very sleazy aspects to it. I think there's the thing I'd be quite keen to talk about later as well is also how you've got this curious mix where you've got the whole violence against women was a big subject, and it's something that's explored in this movie. And Lee Grant in real life was actually an activist against domestic violence, so it's interesting that she took this role where she is being pursued by kind of like your everyman psycho, as Michael Ironside, who is out to punish women. Well, to be honest, everybody. And also, I thought what was interesting was the comparisons potentially with American politics, with like the kind of Donald Trump and the people who are basically outraged and angry at everyone who's not what they are themselves. And you have a kind of similar character in Michael Ironside, who as Leonore Zahn, as the good time girl, when she goes to his apartment and says, as you heard at the beginning of the show, that you hate everyone, like Jews, blacks, you know, you name it, and you want the whole world to yourself. And so you have this kind of interesting kind of aspect where you have Michael Ironside is playing this kind of character who is just literally against everyone, but especially against women. So I think it's an interesting movie. It's also, I think it's a bit overlong, but there's some great suspense sequences in it. I think it, which rival Halloween 2, certainly. I mean, I don't think there's anything suspenseful really in Hospital Massacre, aka X-Ray, particularly. But in this film, I think it works as a slash movie. but also kind of works as a kind of a mirror to what else was going on at the time in kind of North American society and politics and everything. So, yeah, I think it's an interesting movie. I'm sort of glad we're covering it finally. So, let's hear what you think, Joseph.
One thing I like about Visiting Hours, and it's something that, you know, definitely keeps the film, if nothing else, above average, is the uncomfortable close-ups on both Colt Hawker, his murders, and I like how the camera kind of chooses to capture a lot of the imagery in sort of like an obfuscated manner. I think the cinematography really is quite excellent for what I essentially think is a Lifetime movie, in my opinion, only with a little more, I guess you'd call it blood and viscera. Than the typical entry in a Lifetime film. I think Michael Ironside's quite good as Colt Hawker. He speaks very few words, and he kind of sort of attacks his victims in like a tunnel vision, what you'd say, like, you know, everyone's not him. So he's just focused on this particular, I guess, everybody, you know. But unfortunately, I thought there were very long stretches of tedium. When we're not really focusing on Hawker and his rampage, the film kind of grinds to a halt more often than not, I'm afraid to say. William Shatner in particular feels almost like an afterthought, and I found most of the other characterization for everyone else kind of wanting as well. I don't know, I hate to compare it to something like Halloween 2, because I think, you know, all movies should kind of be judged on their own merits. But in this case, I'm definitely going to have to recommend Michael Myers' Further Adventures if you're looking for similar subject matter. All in all, you know, I think it's a beautiful movie to look at. But I'd kind of be lying if I said it's one of the best of its era. It's a mixed bag for me, kind of a split down the line, I'd say. I'd give maybe a 5 out of 10.
Okay. Well, interesting. Nathan, what are your thoughts on Visiting Hours?
Oh, I love Visiting Hours. I think it's really, really good. And to me, I do have a few issues with it, nothing major. One thing is, I don't feel the suspense ever was as good throughout the movie as it was at the beginning at the attack at Lee Grant's house. Like, to me, that was pretty frightening. Like, it happened so fast, and it's actually very scary and suspenseful, and I'm like, nothing else in the movie quite matches that, in my opinion. It's almost like it started off really strong, and it's still a strong movie, but the suspense aspect, to me, it just didn't quite match that opening, or that, not really opening, but that beginning scene where she gets attacked at her house. And I really think that dumbwaiters are underutilized in, you know, horror movies in general, because, I mean, like, this had a great suspenseful sequence with her using one to try to get away. I'm like, so, I mean, I thought that was really good, too. I like the idea of having, you know, I mean, kind of two heroines. I mean, Lee Grant is the main one, but I kind of like that we, you know, had that. And I guess one thing that kind of I didn't enjoy as much about Visiting Hours is the body count, it's not extremely, I don't know, not extremely high. And to me, like, I guess I much prefer, like, huge body count slashers. I love the fact that, you know, Lenore Zann's character, you totally think that she's going to be, you know, just some secondary character that he picks up and murders. And I was actually really surprised to see that, you know, she doesn't get murdered. I mean, I expected her to. So, I mean, I was actually kind of surprised about that one. But I also have to disagree with you, Joseph, because I find that, you know, there's a lot of suspense in Hospital Massacre.
That was Justin, not me.
Justin was accused.
I'm sorry, Justin. Your accent sounds so much alike. I don't know.
Oh, yes.
I just couldn't, you know, figure your voices out.
Blimey. Me.
But I disagree with you, Justin, then, because I think there's a lot of, you know, really scary suspense in Hospital Massacre.
One thing, Nathan, the scene with Lenore Zann in his apartment, I really do love. It kind of reminds me of Maniac in a way, where they have these uncomfortable close-ups of what he's doing to her and on her face as she's just basically sitting there just not really fighting back, and it's just, it's very uncomfortable. It's very sleazy and misogynistic, but it's kind of unusually striking in its own kind of way. Mm. Yeah, that particular scene, anyway, is what I mean.
Yeah, Eric.
I mean, I'm a big fan of the movie. Mm. You know, I don't want to make it seem like I'm not. I mean, to me, Visiting Hours would totally, for me, be, you know, a 7 or an 8 out of 10 is probably what I would give it.
Okay. Right. Well, thank you, Eric. What are your initial thoughts on Visiting?
Well, it was refreshing to actually sit back and watch an actual film with a plot and acting and stuff in it this week. You know, professionally well made. You know, I don't think the result in the end is a masterpiece by any means, but it feels like one next to Hollywood's New Blood and Bloodhook. The main beef I'd have with Visiting Hours is that it is overlong, which I think you mentioned as well. It's 105 minutes, and slasher movies really need to be a taut 80, 85 minutes, in my opinion. And also, as you know, Nathan and Joseph have pointed out, it opens with a bang. It opens the way a lot of slasher movies end, and it's really good. But then there's no suspense really for me throughout the rest of the movie. Again, I've said this many times in the podcast, I prefer mystery killers who are masked, you know, much like in Hush. If Michael Ironside had been going around in a sort of mysterious mask killing the people, it would have been brilliant. It possibly could have been as good as Halloween 2, but as it is, it's nowhere near as good as Halloween 2, in my opinion. I did like the cameo, the Friday the 13th cameo in it, though. Did anyone spot that? Where Adrian King's hair comes back to make a guest appearance atop Lee Grant's head.
Yes.
Yeah, nice. And the mother from Nightmare on Elm Street. What's her name again?
Ronnie Blakely.
Ronnie Blakely.
Yeah, her acting style kind of matches Ronnie Blakely, in my opinion. Sorry, she's awful in this. I'm sorry. I like Lee Grant, but I thought she was terrible in this.
I don't think she's great either. She's doing real sort of soap opera acting in this.
Yeah.
And the weird thing is, you get the impression from the film that Lee Grant and William Shatner were only there for maybe 3 or 4 days, because it starts off with them and kind of ends with them, but in the middle they disappear into the background kind of, and it focuses more on Linda Pearl and, you know, my favorite character, as I'm sure I shared this with Nathan, he was mentioning her, is Lenore Zahn as Lisa, who arrives with large crimped hair and neon,
yeah, crimped hair is what I was about to say.
And her neon pink jeans. And I just like the way she's feisty. I mean, she gets a beating from Michael Ironside, but she doesn't, you know, she goes back for revenge. And also she's a catalyst, really, in helping the really, really crap police force in this town to identify who the killer is. But mainly I like her because she's got big crimped hair and neon jeans.
She's 80s fabulous.
She's 80s-tastic. She fell off the 80s tree and hit every branch on the way down.
I know. That's what makes her amazing.
She's so amazing. One thing I didn't quite understand is that when she goes to Michael Ironside's apartment, he has all these letters that he's supposedly written to judges, you know, given out to them about verdicts they've given or not given, but he's framed them rather than sent them to them. I mean, I didn't really understand why.
Maybe they were copies.
Do you think they were copies?
Yeah,
I don't know. It was weird. Maybe they were. Yeah,
I think maybe it was like his trophies. Like in his mind, he's right, they're wrong.
All right,
I just wanted to kind of memorialize that.
Maybe it's his art. It's a piece of performance art. Maybe, yeah. Also, I found it a tad contrived, but in a good way, that Michael Ironside manages to keep continuously coming back to the hospital to kill more people. You know, I think the film is spread over a course of several days, and he comes to the hospital, kills somebody, disappears, comes back the next day, kill somebody else. And this is what makes me think the police and the security surrounding this hospital are really, really crap.
It's like the scene where he hurts his arm just to get back to the hospital. He keeps finding ways to, you know, get into the hospital. I just thought it would kind of be funny if he just walked in and said, "Hey, can I use your restroom?"
Well, that would have been his next move, surely. One of the things I do love about Visiting Hours, though, is the advertising campaign, which is it's an exterior shot of the hospital, and the lights of certain rooms are on and some are off, and it forms the shape of a skull, which is used as the poster art and also used in the trailer. I thought that was really effective. And also the comparison to Halloween 2, I think Halloween 2 is a much better movie, although Visiting Hours is a much more realistic-looking hospital, even if the security is a bit unrealistic. At least there's other people and other patients in this hospital. It seems more populated than Haddonfield Memorial, which is this huge big building with quite a lot of staff for what looks like one patient. So it's not on a par. It's not in the same league as Halloween 2, which I think is one of my, you know, it's one of my favorite slasher movies. What?
I can answer your question there. In Halloween 2, which is in a stateside film, there's no patients there because they can't afford health care, whereas Canadians' health care is free.
There we go.
So that's why there's a lot of patients there. There you go.
It's a political statement. God, yeah. there's so many layers.
There's layers.
Slasher movies, yeah. It's better than Hospital Massacre. But I do, Nathan, calm down. I do like Hospital Massacre. I do like it.
If I'm honest, I think Hospital Massacre is not a better film, but I think it's a little more entertaining.
I can see where you're coming from with that.
Hospital Massacre is a lot of fun. I do disagree with Nathan that there's a lot of suspense in it, though. But
well, I don't think a lot of suspense, but there's a few scenes that really got me in that movie, mm-hmm. even if they are kind of silly in hindsight.
There's better boobies in Hospital Massacre. I'll say that.
I will say this. I was looking at Justin's review, and I mean, the body count is 8. And I'm like, why am I thinking that there was so few? And then I kind of was looking at it, and I was like, oh, life support turned off. I mean, like, the deaths aren't really spectacular, so maybe that's why I thought there was a lower body count.
Yeah, the goriest scene in the film, I think, is where Michael Ironside deliberately cuts his arm, or he throws his arm down into a pile of broken glass. And that's quite gruesome and gory. But, I mean, the deaths themselves aren't that, unless I miss something, aren't that gruesome. Although there is a terrific surprise jump scene where, I suppose, spoiler alert, our heroine, who is actually Linda Pearl, where she gets stabbed in her house, where she's on the phone and he appears from underneath the table.
Oh, yeah.
Did anyone think that was an effective scare? I thought it was.
Yeah, I mean, no, I really like that scene just because before it happens, I mean, I kept wondering, like, okay, something's going to happen, but what? And that kind of builds the suspense.
And there is, because there's a lot of POV camera work at that stage. So you keep thinking he's sort of hiding, you know, in the next room or behind a door or behind a curtain or something. And then he appears from underneath the table. So,
I like how in most of these slasher films, they use a cat to kind of give a false scare. I think this might be the only one that uses a parrot.
Yeah, I noticed that. Yeah.
That was kind of interesting.
Yeah. I wonder if that parrot can flush your toilet.
Squawkity, 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 squawk. Yeah, anyway.
Okay, yeah, they're my thoughts. I think it's a good movie. I think it's just a bit overlong. Prefer a Mask Killer and not as good as Halloween 2.
Thank you.
I would agree.
I think I've mentioned it many times on the podcast before, but I remember seeing, I'm so old, I saw the trailer for Visiting Hours at the cinema.
That is old.
Yeah. It was in front of some Disney movie, bizarrely. But it had quite the impact on me, as you can imagine. It was that, and with the classic thing of the hospital with the lights turning off and coming up with a skull. So, probably quite inappropriate in front of a Disney movie, but it had a lasting impact on me, so that's why I think I've always had a bit of a soft spot for the movie. A couple of other things I liked the sidekick, Linda Pearl's sidekick in this, who gets killed quite early on, which is a shame, but you know, when she's always rating her dates, and she said that one of them was she rated as a 1 or something because he cried in bed. Which I imagine you know all about, Eric.
I was going to say, was she talking about you?
It's too late, Eric. But
no, I win.
No, I don't think you do.
It's
a bit of a schizophrenic.
Why don't you go off on your flying carpet, Justin?
Oh, your stupid flying carpet
that doesn't move.
It was 1981, Eric. As is this movie, wasn't it? Was it 1981? Yes, 1981. The video box I've got here says 1983, but that must have been when it came out. We'll talk about why. Should we talk a little bit why, you know, the whole video nasty thing? I mean, why on earth would this have been identified as a video nasty, really? Because there's nothing in here that approaches anything like Zombie Flesh Eaters or Absurd or any of the kind of the gore effects.
I think I know why.
It's the sleaze you were mentioning, I suppose.
Yeah, it's the uncomfortable. Uncomfortable close-ups of him doing bodily harm to women. It's not bloody, but it's very voyeuristic. I'd say that's probably why it got inclusion.
I mean, it probably, I'm sure it is, because there's also comparisons with Michael Powell's Peeping Tom, isn't there? Because that whole thing that he takes photographs of the women as he kills them, or because he's got that kind of skull in kind of montage of photographs, hasn't he, in his closet, of this skull of all these, of some of the victims you haven't seen, like an older woman. There's also the kind of, it's a bit of a throwaway thing, isn't it? But this idea that he was made a monster by the abuse he suffered by the hands of his father.
Well, yeah, there is an insinuation, like his father is sort of on top of him outside in the garden, which is kind of creepy.
It was insinuated.
In the book, yeah. they go into that detail like a lot more.
Oh, have you read the novelization?
Yes, but I read it like, oh, man, probably over 15 years ago. So I don't remember a lot about it. I just remember that I watched the movie right after reading the book. And in the novelization, like the backstory, his backstory is... It's a huge part of the book. I mean, it goes into detail, you know, about, you know, his parents and all of that. I mean, it's very detailed about that.
Okay, well, that's been interesting.
Mainly what I remember.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk about...
What about the video... Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I was just curious about the Video Nasty thing. Like, who decided? Like, was there a board of people that decided what was a Video Nasty and what wasn't?
Well, kind of. Yes, there was the director of public prosecutions, I think, made up a list. And it kind of depended on, I think, if it's on successful prosecutions, because there was another list, which was the Section 2, wasn't there, I think, of the which are films like Superstition and Rosemary's Killer and films like that, which weren't official Video Nasties. But I think the main Video Nasty lists were of films which... could be prosecuted or had been prosecuted, but it didn't make any sense. I mean, it was all bizarre anyway. There was no kind of rhyme or reason with it.
But the stuff that you've told me was Video Nasty is, I was like, that's so weird because it's not even that bad. So I'm like, it almost seems like they were like,
Unhinged, for example. Unhinged, yeah. Which has off the top of my head, has no real graphic scenes in it. It was a Video Nasty.
It's a very dark time. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but couldn't a citizen face some sort of prosecution for the ownership of these films?
I'm not sure.
I don't think ownership, no, but distribution was a criminal offence, wasn't it?
Okay.
And trading, if you traded in them and things like that.
But the guy who officially put out the VHS of Nightmares and Damaged Brain served 6 months in prison, didn't he?
Yeah, that's complete bullshit.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, it's difficult. I mean, looking back, because I mean, the majority, of Video Nasties now are released uncut in the UK. Apart from, mostly it's the films that have got the cannibal films that got real animal violence, which are still cut, which I think is fair enough. but I think the majority of Video Nasties are released uncut here now, without any, you know, hoo ha at all. But I think it was kind of for companies that put the films out, because 20th Century Fox put this out, and it was put on CBS Fox Video in the United Kingdom on on video. So I think they were probably mortified, a bit like Thorny EMI were when The Burning was sort of taken as a Video Nasty as well, that these big corporate respectable companies were caught up with the likes of Cannibal Holocaust and Absurd and Zombie Flesh Eaters and... on the, you know, little labels like Vipco and things like that. So it was kind of a tumultuous time, really, back then. We'll get into more background about it shortly. But one thing I did want to mention, which I couldn't quite work out, obviously during the climactic chase scene, why were there dogs in the basement? Anyone realise why there were dogs in a hospital?
Was it Scooby-Doo trying to solve a mystery?
It could have been.
It's kind of like asking why in Slaughter Hotel that psychiatric hospital has all those medieval weapons.
Yes.
You just kind of go with it, I guess.
No, I know.
Or why in the video for Arabian Nights, Susie's on a really, really crap flying carpet.
It was called Irony. Eric, look it up. but also the other thing that dates it, of course, them smoking in hospital as well. Which, I mean, you can't smoke anywhere indoors.
Smoking anywhere, yeah. No, yeah, Justin.
I don't smoke, Eric, anymore.
When I met you in Manchester, you disappeared every 5 minutes for a cigarette.
Yeah, but that was a long time. I haven't smoked. I haven't no nicotine has touched my lips for almost 6 months.
6 minutes.
Months.
Minutes. Eric.
Anyway, we won't talk about what's been touching your lips in the last.
You guys are.
I did think it was funny when William Shatner, Lee Grant goes to the window, opens the windows for fresh air, and he says, "Close it, you're going to catch pneumonia," even though she's only been there for like 5 seconds. But then, of course, I remembered it was Canada, so maybe he had a point. There's also some kind of nice symmetry with William Shatner in this, because, of course, William Shatner was the Captain Kirk mask was used for Halloween, wasn't it?
Yes.
So it was kind of quite a nice kind of symmetry to have him in this, although he is a bit of a, I don't know, his character is a bit superfluous, isn't it, really?
Completely. It's like Nathan said, it's an afterthought, or was it Joseph said it?
Yeah, I said that, and I think the reason why he's essentially in the film, because if I read correctly, I think he was originally cast in the Cold Hawker role, but they preferred, you know, kind of Ironside's more just kind of bug-eyed unstableness to William Shatner's kind of...
I can't imagine William Shatner...
...mannered histrionics. Yeah, I don't see him as a villain.
Can you imagine how camp that would have been to have William Shatner covered naked, covered in makeup, and all her jewels pinned all over him at the beginning of the movie?
I'm going to kill you now. There's something on the wing.
That would have been.
I like William Shatner. Okay, I don't.
Yeah,
no, I do too. As well.
He wouldn't have been very effective as the killer in him.
He's actually, for what little runtime he has, he's actually kind of good in this. He's not like over the top or anything. He's kind of subdued.
Yeah,
but he's very superfluous, as Justin was saying. He serves no purpose to the plot.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Well, any other thoughts before we go on to background?
Not off the top of my head.
Was that guy who got the sort of rubber ball shoved in his mouth, was that Groucho Marx?
Yes. He was still alive and well in 1980.
Okay, well, shall we move on to some backgrounds? Who would like to go first? Joseph?
Y'all. Yeah, I got quite a bit here. Apparently the production dates were August of 1980 through October of 1980. It's a 2 month shoot. The budget, I believe, in Canadian dollars was $5.5 million. In the States, it grossed $5.2 million on its opening weekend on 1,100 screens. And its cumulative gross overall was $13.2 million. Those figures may be a little off. It's just what I did through research. Apparently, I'd never noticed this, and I'll have to go back and watch it, but the two-part episode of Seinfeld called The Trip apparently pays homage to Visiting Hours when Kramer visits the actress. Apparently, she's made up to look exactly like, I think, Lee Grant's character, and this particular character on the Seinfeld episode talks about movies she had done, and people, you know, from what I've read, people swear that it's a Visiting Hours homage. Like I said, I haven't seen that particular episode in years, so I'll have to go back and check that out. But there's that. Director Jean-Claude Lord didn't really go on to do much else stateside. He did a lot of made-for-TV stuff, but he did do a movie I like a lot. 1986's The Vindicator, which is basically kind of a pre-RoboCop Terminator kind of clone. Kind of bad, but very entertaining. I would suggest checking that out. Let's see. The limp that Michael Ironside sports at the end of the movie was real. Apparently, he broke his ankle on the first day of filming, so why he wasn't limping throughout, I don't know, but that's just what I read. Let's see. Star Michael Ironside was cast as Cold Hawker, partly because he had given such a sinister performance in David Cronenberg's Scanners from 1981. Which was also from the same producers of Visiting Hours. So I think Justin might have mentioned that earlier in his thoughts. Okay. This was the first of the UK's infamous Video Nasty films to be aired on television. The ITV network aired the film uncut in 1989, and subsequently the network received a fine from the Broadcasting Standards Council. It's the first English-language film directed by French-Canadian director Jean-Claude Lord, and I believe, you know, one of his last. First of two movie collaborations of actor Michael Ironside and director Jean-Claude Lord. The second was around 7 years later with 1989's Minefield, so I guess he did do another one. The movie's Visiting Hours title logo, printed in white lettering, colored the letter R in red to evoke blood, and shaped the character as well with a long serif crossed with a line to evoke both an injection syringe and an intravenous drip. The film's French title is Terreur à la Hospital Central. My French is terrible, sorry. Which translates to The Terror of Central Hospital.
Really?
Wow. Yeah, apparently. And that's all the background information I have on it.
Okay, well, thank you, Joseph. Nathan, how about you?
No.
No? Okay.
All I had was the book.
Okay.
Well, that was good.
Yeah. That was good. Thank you. What about you, Eric?
Okay, well, I have a few bits and pieces, a lot of what I had, Joseph has already said, but it opened in U.S. theaters on May the 28th, 1982. It went straight to number two. Behind Rocky 3 that weekend. It was shot under the title The Fright, which is a very nondescript title. Visiting Hours is much more, tells you a lot more about the film. Jean-Claude Lorge, as you said, he went on to make The Vindicator. He also made a 1989 movie called Minefield, also starring Michael Ironside. I remember renting this on VHS back in the day. I think it's a kind of a telepathy-based sci-fi movie, so it has kind of Scanners-type similarities. The film was cut by 1 minute and 9 seconds, which is astonishing, really, when first submitted to the BBFC in 1982. That's the UK censorship board. And the same version was subsequently put out in video, although the cuts didn't prevent it, of course, from becoming a video now. As we said, and as Joseph was saying there, I think accidentally was how they said it, accidentally got broadcast uncut on ITV in 1989, which is weird because ITV were notorious for censoring their movies, like any bit of bad language or anything. I remember watching Christine on ITV around the same era, and there's a scene where Buddy Repperton grabbed someone's crotch in it, and that scene was cut. So that's how bad their censorship was. So it's weird that they showed.
Actually, it was Moochie who grabbed his crotch.
Oh, is it? Sorry,
the big guy.
Yeah, but just the scene of somebody grabbing someone's crotch was deemed too much for 11 p.m. at night. So that was cut. So I'm surprised they managed to show Visiting Hours uncut. I'm assuming it must have been accidental. Just the print they got mixed up or something. A few familiar faces within Visiting Hours. Of course, Lenore Zann, we've mentioned, Lisa with the crimped hair and the pink neon jeans. She was also in Happy Birthday to Me. Neil Affleck, who is Axel in My Bloody Valentine, has a cameo. I can't spot him in the movie, but apparently he has a cameo as a police officer.
He's the one that when Linda Pearl is leaving hospital and he talks to her, they walk down the steps together.
Oh, is he?
Mm.
I must keep a closer eye out for him. Harvey Aitken, who plays Vinny, was also in Funeral Home, a.k.a. Cries in the Night, starring Leslie Donaldson. And Helen Hughes, who plays Louise, was also in The Incubus and later appeared in the William Frewitt movie Blue Monkey. I think it's a giant killer insect movie, isn't it? Whenever you're watching a Canadian horror movie of this vintage, there's a lot of cross-pollination of actors. It's great fun to watch. It's like watching Australian soaps where it's just all the same actors appearing in each one, such as Alan Dale. So that's all I have, Justin, on Visiting Hours. Over to you.
Okay. Well, thank you. You've pretty much covered, there's not much left apart from on the Anchor Bay DVD, which is what I've got of the movie, which is the one I watch. There is a radio spot, or a couple of radio spots, and a few, about four or five TV spots. It's kind of a bit of a cliche now when promoting a horror movie to show images of people watching the movie and jumping as a way of trying to generate interest in the movie. I'm not sure what was the first film to do that, but certainly Visiting Hours, the people who put out Visiting Hours employed that. And here's the radio spot are doing just that.
You've heard commercials where people tell you what they thought about a movie. Listen to what an entire audience had to say about Visiting Hours. This is not a trick. The screams you are hearing are the actual audience reaction to a sneak preview of Visiting Hours, a film so frightening you may never recover. Visiting Hours, rated R, under 17, not admitted without parent.
Really?
I do love all that hullabaloo and the, you know, because it's the idea of, I can't imagine audiences sitting there screaming at Visiting Hours, because it's certainly the bits where he jumps out, I imagine on the big screen would have played out even better than they do on the small screen. So maybe they kind of just took those in isolation. But there's not really much more else to say, apart from Leonore Zahn. I think you mentioned she was in Happy Birthday to Me. She was also in another more obscure Canadian slasher, American Nightmare, which is pretty good. It would be good to cover at some point. Mm-hmm. And she's now a politician in Canada. I think she's actually Australian-born, Leonore Zahn. But yeah, she's but she has. I don't think she's turned her back on the horror kind of her things, because I think she appeared at some conventions with Leslie Donaldson in the last couple of years. So interesting. But apparently, I was reading up about her and saying, because obviously, a lot of politicians have a lot more colourful backgrounds than Leonore Zahn. But apparently, someone put out an image of her topless from one of her films in an effort to discredit her at some point. But I don't think it did a trick. But considering what's coming out about certain politicians on both sides of the Atlantic at the moment, it kind of makes it look very tame indeed.
I think showing your boobies is the worst thing you can possibly do.
Is it? Okay.
Yes.
Well, let's just thank goodness Margaret Thatcher never showed
off
her
boobies. Makes baby Jesus cry.
Well, you're from Ireland, Eric, where everything makes baby Jesus cry.
It does. Everything does. Yeah.
Everything does. So, that's Catholic guilt for you. And I should know, because I was brought up Catholic as well. So
I'm not. I wasn't brought up a Catholic.
Were you not? Heathen?
No. Yeah, I know. I'm one of the minority over here.
Burn the witch.
Eric, are you one of those? Are you one of those bloody atheists?
I am now. Jesus. Well, literally Jesus. Yeah.
So am I. I think we're. This is the.
I'm an upstanding Christian. I resent you.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm a member of the what's the church that do all the protests against gay people over there?
Westboro
Baptist Church. That's what I'm a member of. Yeah.
I bet they welcomed you with open arms, didn't they, Eric?
They did. Yeah.
There's still any news about them going over to Iraq to protest ISIS?
I hope they do.
Yeah, that would be hilarious.
Somebody needs to protest against ISIS because they're very bold.
They are. But I would love to see that. That would, I think people were offering to pay their airfare, which I would certainly chip in for. But so I think that is pretty much Visiting Hours. I don't think there's anything else left to say. But what we could do, actually, is after, let's tell you how to get in contact with the show if you want to let us know what you thought about Visiting Hours. But after we come back, Joseph, will you read out what people have said on our Facebook page?
I will.
Okay, we'll be back in a second.
Be sure to search for and like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at @THC_podcast. Our voicemail is 858-233-9281, and you can email us directly at the.hysteria.continues@gmail.com.
Okay, Joseph, do you want to read out some feedback from the Facebook forums?
Sure. We don't use Twitter. Anyway, let's see. Amanda Reyes says, one of my old writing professors at UCLA Extension wrote Visiting Hours. He told us that William Shatner was originally cast in the bad guy role, but that Ironside wanted to meet with them and showed up at a dinner looking, well, like Ironside, so they cast him instead. I believe there were no hard feelings with Shatner either. It's a great film, and I agree it's very feminist and perfectly played out, with Lee Grant being so effing amazing in the lead. Okay, I'll disagree with that. It's always interesting when you see quote-unquote slasher-type films with mature characters in the lead roles like this in The Fan. There's something about stalking strong, well-placed, and successful characters and watching them not take shit that resonates with me. I want more. Also, Linda Pearl was never more beautiful. I love this one. That was from Amanda Reyes. Chris Thompson says, You guys are best chums with the folk at 88 Films, so tell me, are there any plans to bring this gem to these hallowed shores anytime soon? Really can't believe it's still not available on any format here. Justin, would you possibly know anything about that?
What's that? The
it's not available anywhere in the UK, I assume he means, is it?
Yeah, I'm wondering if, I think he just wants to know if 88 Films or maybe anyone else has any plans for a release.
What, not visiting hours? Yeah. Not that I'm aware of, but probably because it's probably still owned by 20th Century Fox. But Scream Factory put it out, didn't they, on Blu-ray?
A double bill with something. Yes. Let me Google that.
Yeah.
Bad Dreams, was it?
Oh, it probably was, actually, wasn't it? Yeah, because Bad Dreams, the trailer for Bad Dreams, is on the Anchor Bay.
Yeah, I have the Anchor Bay disc as well.
Yeah. So, yeah, I've no idea if it's...
Yeah, it's Bad Dreams and Visiting Hours double feature Blu-ray.
Yeah. I think 88 would probably have difficulty picking it up, just purely because it was a major studio pickup. And I imagine that they probably don't. What I've noticed actually recently is that some of the big studios are putting stuff out on YouTube. Have you seen Paramount have put some of the horror movies on an official YouTube account? So really? You can watch them on there. Yeah.
So like from what era?
I'm trying to remember actually which ones they.
70s and 80s. I noticed a lot of those films.
All right. Yeah. I'll just have a look. If you keep reading stuff out, Joseph, I'll quick look to see what's on there.
Okay. Tobin Bell from the Saw series, aka Kieran Edwards, says it could possibly be cut a few minutes here and there, unless there are more outtakes of Shatner eating ice cream. But it's an excellent suspense film with slasher elements, with a trio of great performances from Ironside, Grant, and Pearl. That's from Kieran Edwards.
Thank you, Karen. Oh, hello.
Can you guys hang on just a second?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
All right, I'll be right back.
Oh, you know what happens when people say that?
His cat. What? I bet it pooped in the floor this time.
Oh my god.
Oh, I am. I'm looking at the Paramount Vault here on YouTube. So you got things like the Deadly Bees. I can see there. Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2.
Yeah.
The local ones. Yeah.
So it's interesting what they're pumping out on there. So, it's worth keeping an eye on, as it were.
All right. Sorry, guys. Just whenever you're ready, I'll jump back into it.
No, we're ready. Well, I'm going to keep this all in because it adds the magic of the hysteria.
The magic, yeah.
Behind the scenes
okay,
magic.
Yeah. Anyway, Vaughn Colmier says, this is almost the same story as Halloween 2, but done in a much better way.
Oh, controversial.
Contra.
Insert Eric Gasp. While Halloween 2 feels like a cash grab, this is much more genuine. Ironside is giving his all as the psycho. This is the first film I ever saw with Ironside in it that I remember. It's a tense flick, and it really bothered me when I was a kid. It should be held in higher regard. Vaughn Colmier.
Okay, well, that's interesting to hear.
Yeah.
Dissenting views, isn't it? Yeah.
Yes. John Matthews says, I always liked this one. I recall seeing it on video down here in Australia on the CBS Fox label, Uncut. Us Aussies, unlike the BBFC, did not share the madness of calling this title a video nasty, despite it being quite tame. Anyway, I really think Michael Ironside gives one of his best performances as the creepy loner. I think the explanation why he hates women is actually quite clever, creating a debate to whether this is more of a pro-feminist film with its strong, independent, outspoken female lead. Don't want to sound too patriotic referring to Australia, but Australian actress Lenore Zahn makes a quick appearance being brutalized by Ironside. She has been in quite a few Canadian slashers of this time. A decent amount of gore, good pacing, brilliant performances, and you've got one of the more underappreciated entries of the golden era.
Cool. Okay. No, thank you for that.
One of our mortal enemies, our Alishan, although I think his brother Mike might be more on the enemies. No, we're just kidding, Mike and Ara. We love you. He says, I'll be honest, this isn't a movie I revisit very often, as there is a little fun to be had in the Hospital of Horrors. I understand that this may not be a very popular opinion, but there are times where Visiting Hours feels more akin to one of the Lifetime Channel made-for-TV thrillers. I would agree with that. my wife tends to watch than an actual slasher film. Having said all that, I absolutely appreciate the feminist message presented here and have nothing but respect for everyone involved. Let's see. Torsten Fehl? Fehl? I hope that's his last name. I've never caught this one. It's one of those black holes in my watching history. We'll have to use Eric's special ordering, in quotations, service to catch up before listening.
Ha, ha, ha.
See what he did there.
Yes. Brad, you talking about Amazon? Amazon is what he
means. Yeah, that's exactly. Yeah. Amazon. Amazon Prime or whatever it is you use over there. Brad Yasuda says, hopefully you'll mention the fact that Lenore Zahn is now a politician in Nova Scotia, Canada. And I think we did.
We did, yes.
Yes.
And that she had her boobies used against her.
Mm. Just like you
were. Ben
somebody Ben shushing me.
Not no, me. Justin made a joke about you.
What did he say?
He said you have giant back. You have giant knockers.
Well, yeah.
Well, there you go. Okay.
Anyway, Ben Scherer says, Lee Grant is very feminist and important in this film, and I love it. David C. Millay says, I love Michael Ironside in anything, especially me.
Well, actually, just as an aside, about with the Michael Ironside character, didn't it strike you as odd that all the women, not all the women, but the women he wasn't killing, were all kind of throwing themselves at him in the movie?
Yeah. I was going to talk about earlier in the show when we were doing recently scene. I was going to talk about Bates Motel, the TV series that's out now. And that was one of the striking points of that show, not to go off on a tangent here, is that I find it very odd that all these girls in this small town who are quite attractive are throwing themselves at this gangly weirdo kid. But anyway, that's just an aside.
It's the Joe Spinell in Maniac syndrome. It's
like, yeah, it is.
How does he get Carolyn Monroe? Of all girls, he gets Carolyn Monroe.
Yeah.
He got his babe.
Did you know that one little thing I forgot to mention was apparently Michael Ironside said after he appeared in this movie, he got loads of marriage proposals
from women. Yeah, I saw that as well. It's like,
wow. Wow.
It must be that kind of that weird thing, you know, when people kind of sort of start to marry prisoners who they've never met and stuff. Or never.
Or want to be slapped around by John Goodman in a cellar.
Yes. But enough of your Eric. Private fantasies.
Sean Kelly. Oh.
What?
Oh, no, it's back.
What is?
Oh, no. The what? Echo.
The echo and the bunion.
I can't hear an echo.
It's a clack, 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 echo. Clack, 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 classic.
Is it still? I can't hear an echo, echo, echo.
Oh, we can.
Okay. Come on, let's push through it. Echo. Push through it. We're almost there.
Okay.
Come on, Joseph.
I don't know if I should.
Well, it's not recording at this end. Can you hear all right?
It's just, it's hard. It's hard to read stuff because I keep, yeah. Call back. Do it now.
Do it now. Okay, hold on. Okay, so.
Oh, no.
Come into the light, Carol Ann.
Bruce, come into my mouth, Carol Ann.
Carol Ann.
Okay, right. So carry on before it all goes horribly wrong again.
Picking up where we left off, Sean Kelly says, I was surprised by
Creek. Who's that?
I'm just gonna sit here and for a while.
Who's creaking chairs and shit?
That was Justin.
It was not me. Was it Nathan?
Sounds like somebody's farting.
I've been putting my phone on mute when I'm not talking.
Okay, well, it wasn't my creak.
Wasn't I'm not sitting on a chair. I have to sit on the floor.
You've got to sit on the floor? Maybe
what?
Why do you have to sit on the floor? I know you're in Dublin and there's been a recession. But
because I have to do the podcast in my bedroom and I don't have a desk or a chair in here. Oh. So I sit on the floor.
Oh, dear.
You see, it's not good for my lovely bottom.
We see what we have to go through to bring you.
No wonder you're so angry all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Well,
my poor backside's aching, as the to quote Bloody Moon.
Your poor backside's aching.
Yeah.
What were you up to last night?
What do you like to know?
No, not really. Joseph, carry on. Quickly.
Is it safe?
I think it's safe. What's this, the marathon man? Is it safe?
Yes. Sean Kelly.
Yes.
He peeks around to make sure nothing else is going on. Sean Kelly says, I was surprised by how much I liked this movie. Some pretty good suspense, too. And finally, Lincoln Kernow says, cool. Like Visiting Hours was on the video nasty list for a while, but apart from being a little sleazy, if not very gory, still, as hospital slashers go, it's quite good, but not as fun as X-Ray.
Yeah, which is what you were saying earlier, yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
And that's it.
Well, thank you, everyone who wrote in for that. I don't think we've got any other feedback, have we, or have we?
No, it's only been a week, so no one's really written
in. Yeah, it's only been a week. So, but do write in, because we always like to hear from you. And it's always a good way to, if you want to talk about the movie, and we're going to talk about what we're going to be covering next time shortly, then we'll put that up on the boards, won't we, to get some feedback. In fact, why don't we talk about it now? Is it your choice next, Eric, isn't it?
It is my choice next. And again, we're going off-piste with the listener picks. So we've done seven Friday the 13th. We've done eight Friday the 13th. We've done seven Halloweens. But we've only done one Nightmare on Elm Street. So I'm going to fix that or redress the balance. So there's time for the Jesse to come onto the phone, and Freddy's Revenge is our pick for next week.
Excellent.
And I'm looking forward. I haven't watched it in a few years. I'm looking forward to watching it again.
Fantastic. I should probably make it a point to say that there is a Friday the 13th coming up, but
yes,
since our schedules are kind of tentative, we may or may not do Friday Jason Goes to Hell this year.
You would like that, wouldn't you?
I won't be sad if we miss it.
If we miss it, we're sorry. We'll do it next year, or we'll do it the next Friday the 13th, but we may end up getting to it. It just really depends on our scheduling right now.
Okay. Well, we've got a couple of commentaries coming up as well, haven't we? So we need to factor all that in. And as we did likened it earlier to trying to record this podcast, it's like an episode of 24.
Yes.
Things are always happening.
I've noticed when we do the commentaries, everything seems to go, I mean, I better knock on some kind of wood here, but everything seems to go a lot more smoothly when we do the commentaries than when we do the episodes.
Yeah, I don't know why that is, but so touch wood, because you
know. Well, I think it might be because a lot of the commentaries we do are for decent films, and lately we've been doing a lot of shit sandwiches.
Could be. Mind you, this is a pretty good film, and it's all gone to cock.
Oh, well, maybe I shouldn't say that. I mean, we did Suspiria and a few other good ones, but that last episode was enough, you know, enough shit to last for, you know, at least 10 episodes.
Thank you, Alishans. We'll get you.
Look what you've done to us.
We'll get even with you.
We'll get
you. The listener picks will be back. We're not sure when. Probably, I'd say after the summer, I'd say.
We'll see.
It'll
be this summer.
Yeah.
Which
we're
just summer?
We're four non-listener picks and then back to the listener picks.
Yeah, something like that. Right. Well, thank you as ever for listening to The Hysteria Continues and putting up with our little foibles and technical mishaps. But it wouldn't be the same without something going wrong. So, we're going to be back with Jesse on the phone and Freddie Got Fingered. And so say goodbye to the good people.
Bye.
Bye.
Arrivederci.
And just you wait to hear what I play out with.
Oh.
Susie.
Oh.
Has Susie got a hospital based song?
Yes.
Yeah, I thought so.
It's because she's always slicing her wrists.
Yeah.
Oh, Joseph. Well, it's not quite a hospital based song, but you'll see. Doesn't sound too noisy up your end.
No. I'm a little girl and I wear a bra.
Eager Beaver.
Anyway, I've got some nice material for the end of the show with Eric saying he's a little girl and wears a bra.
Oh, no, you weren't recording, were you?
Of course.
Oh, my God.
Welcome to
our neighborhood
important thing later.
What's Joseph doing?
He's like baby talking to
you. Need some what? Oh, aloe vera.
Hello.
Hello, Vera.
I swear, I sound so whiny. I need to quit that.
Yeah. And so, Eric, I said, I get why the guy's playing the bongos, but what about the gorilla in the corner?